On the knee, up before the sun, still you gotta bleed. Tired little town, hot dust in your throat. You learn how to run, then you learn to float. Every eye's a test, every turn is a gate. Every night on the line, a chance to be great. No sleep, no grace, still you show your face. One more round, one more climb, one more shot tonight.
Welcome, everybody, to the Sin City Indie Report. I am Sin City Steve of the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting Network, and being joined, as always, by Red Jed, the one and the only. How in the hell are you, my friend?
Wow! I am doing fucking fantastic, brother, on a Friday night for some indie fun as part of the Sin City Indie Report, baby!
Hell yeah, man. And, you know, we had one hell of a week of shows. Mm-hmm. And let's be real. There's only one way to do this, and that's just to jump in like we're going through a pane of glass, brother. What a better way to start. Let's talk Tournament of Survival.
Indeed.
Man. Dude, this was my show that I was looking forward to this week, and to be 1,000% transparent with it, there were performances on this show that I did not see coming, and there were some names that definitely grabbed the brass ring, to say the very least. I'm talking about it. So one of the first round matches ended up stealing this entire show. That being the first round match between Nino Extremo and Lil Sicko, or Sicko the Clown. Mm-hmm. Dude, I know you were a fan of this match just as much as I was. This was a great showing by both of these guys.
Yeah, talk about a standout performance by both. What can you say about the creativity in this match?
Yeah.
The sheer violence and just not to take a cue from JCW, but the sheer lunacy of this match alone was nuts. The spots, the danger involved in this match. This felt like the main event of Tournament of Survival.
Yes,
it should have been, because it was the match of the night, probably the whole weekend, as a matter of fact, both of the GCW shows.
Both of the GCW shows, I would agree, man. And, you know, there were some elements to this match that, like, things that stood out to me, namely the toothpick board.
Oh, God damn. Cringed some more.
Oh, my God, man. Sicko the Clown took a back bump onto a board that was just covered in toothpicks. And dude got up from that bump looking like he had been pricked by a fucking porcupine.
No kidding. Yeah. Then Nino took, I think, some sort of driver on his head. So he had shit coming out of his head with the toothpicks.
Yeah.
The scaffolding spots in this show were something else. Oh, man, I took a breath. I mean, if I would be still smoking cigarettes, I would have needed one after this match, because it was holy shit times fucking infinity.
Yeah, and realistically, you saw just how grateful the crowd was for Nino, not just throughout that night, but also the next night on Cage of Survival too, which we'll talk about. But that guy really, really solidified himself. And the crowd that was assembled there were chanting, please come back, nonstop to this guy. So, you know, he's definitely made a few new fans, to say the very least, and at least two on this podcast.
Oh, for sure, man. Yeah, this was just like another level. I remember the match that they had. It was like a scramble match, Fremont stuff. I thought, okay, these guys are really standing out. And then they just took it and followed up perfectly from that moment to this moment where I saw elevation here. And I think, please, GCW, let's see these guys next year in TOS, and let's do the main event, and let's see if these guys can even one up what the fuck they did in this match. And if they do that, oh, Lord have mercy, what are they going to do? We will find out.
It was good shit, man. Yeah. And, you know, realistically, a lot of the attention and a lot of the praise did go to Nino Extremo. But again, Sicko the Clown had a standout showing in his own right in this match. Do not get that twisted if you didn't see this show. Both guys, this is one of those instances where, regardless of the match outcome, both guys came out looking infinitely better than they did when they came in, regardless of how they physically looked after this match.
No kidding. I mean, my God, even the night after, Nino.
Yes.
Oh, my fucking Lord.
Dude.
The gashes.
Yes.
The permanent scars, I would
fucking say,
coming off of that first night. And he wore them like a badge, brother.
Yeah, Whew. He definitely did. But, you know, there were some other pretty solid matches throughout the tournament of survival here. And let's be completely transparent with this, too. A name that nobody saw coming. Jonathan Gresham squared off against Masashi Takeda, and who ended up, spoiler alert, winning the whole fucking tournament. Yep. But Gresham, you know, he was unsure, appeared to be kind of apprehensive with, you know, the broken glass on the mat. But, I mean, he got in there. Dude didn't even wear any fucking knee pads either, by the way.
Kidding. Yeah, he was a bloody fucking mess by the end of this match. And I got to give it to him. I mean, for him to take the shot and go all in on it the way he did, damn. And he felt it from the audience too. They have mad respect for Gresham after this match.
Absolutely.
And you know, I guess, you know, losing to the winner of the whole tournament, there's honor in that too. Gresham, I tell you, we'll see if he comes back to this kind of format again. This might be a one and done for him. But
we'll see.
He put himself on the map with it. So, hey, there you go.
He definitely did, man. And, you know, I we'll talk more about Masashi Takeda, but he definitely didn't hold back in this match. Did utilize his scissors. He utilized a litany of weapons against Jonathan Gresham before, obviously, like I said, picking up the win, advancing in the tournament. But this was a fun one to watch, if for no other reason than for the clash of styles between these two guys.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, it felt like it was something that you don't normally see in this, even in this environment.
Yeah,
this drastic shifts of styles.
And dude, Gresham was still wrestling like a ground based wrestling match.
Yeah.
Which was that has to be said. It's not like he showed up and was just like, oh, I'm going to, you know, hit you with 45 light tubes or anything like that. Which, granted, he did use some of the weapons, but he did not stray too far from his own style. So props to him for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Really creative match for sure. All the way. This was probably my second favorite of the show. I have to also say, Viperous looked great out there, and I kind of thought she'd go farther in the tournament. I thought she'd at least make it to the finals against Takeda, but it is what it is. I feel like she was like the sentimental favorite all weekend.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this a little bit more on the second night, but the fans wanted to see a moment from her. They haven't gotten it quite yet. The chase is still on. But I just feel like something's coming up with Viperous.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Give it time. It's definitely going to happen for sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
And you know, I think you brought up a great point. you know, there were some interesting spots in the opening match with Anakin Murphy. Some things didn't exactly go to plan. Yeah. Regardless, they you know, both people in this match brought it. And you can't really hate on people beating the shit out of each other and smashing light tubes over each other.
Right.
You know, if you just don't like that kind of thing, I get it and I understand that. But, you know, you also have to recognize the effort that these guys and gals are putting in, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and the risks they're taking. I mean, the spots they take, especially on a show like this, and even at the Stage of Survival, I mean, the distance of high spots that you're taking into unprotected areas other than a glass pane, there's no really spot to like jump into that's going to protect you in a situation like that. It's just hope for the best.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot, and I mean a lot of extreme physicality in these two shows from this weekend.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, I think it has to be said too, Mr. Danger was the other finalist against Masashi Takeda. And I'll keep it a buck. I thought he was going to lose in the first round to Dr. Redacted.
Absolutely.
I didn't know who he was, but I kind of figured that he would go far considering they mentioned that his mom was in the house.
Right.
You know, so I figured, okay, he's probably going to win second round and, you know, get bounced. But
yep.
No, he ended up, you know, going all the way to the finals. And, you know, competed against Viperous in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. And their match was actually the shortest on this entire show. It was only about 5 minutes. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Sure.
That was only about a 5 minute match.
Yeah. Looking back, it makes sense. I mean, both those second round matches were short to the point, to try to kind of keep what they had left. Blood, literally, for the main event.
Fucking Nino Extremo in his semifinal match against Takeda, taking the suplex throw, shall we say, through, for lack of a better description, an A-frame sign built out of light tubes.
Yeah, just insane. Oh,
what the fuck?
My God. Yeah, no kidding. Unfucking believable. What? Right. Like, again, like we said about Nino, what a performance. Yeah. Like you said, I'll just rephrase what you said too, is like, you know, a lot, this is an acquired taste type of presentation. I don't care how you feel about these matches in terms of like, if you feel like they're sick as hell or disgusting or over the top or crossing the line, what have you, but you have to respect the fact that the men and women of these matches actually put their bodies on the line to the level that they do. It's an extreme amount, but you gotta give them props that they're doing this for the fans and the crowd and us watching the show.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I do have to say, in the back of my mind, I was at least a little bit relieved that one of the weapons that I saw in the ring in the finals, or I'm sorry, in the semifinals, was not used. In the Masashi Takeda versus Nino Extremo match in the semis, there was also a scissors board.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, there was a scissors board in the ring. So that was in there. Thankfully, it wasn't used. But yeah, that could have been, a whole lot more gnarly.
Yeah, that could have been, you're straight up stabbed deep in your gullet or your side and... We got dark blood flowing if we're talking something like that.
Dark blood is no good, but
I don't know. Yep.
In any event, man, shout out to Masashi Takeda for winning the Tournament of Survival and also the very next night being inducted into the Deathmatch Hall of Fame as part of the extravaganza around the Cage of Survival. Mm-hmm. As we kind of pivot and talk about that show now. Realistically, man, for me, there was this show outside of that Cage of Survival match. Mm-hmm. And there was a tag team match that was an impromptu match earlier on in the show. outside of those things, really not a whole lot to speak of. On this particular show, the GCW tag titles were on the line in an impromptu match as Busta and the Brain, Alec Price and Jordan Oliver defeated the odd couple tag team, I guess you could say, of Charles Mason and Joey Janela, who were supposed to face each other on this show. And ended up being teammates.
Yeah, what a weird swerve that was. Didn't see that coming. And then as a matter of fact, I thought, is this some sort of idea to like do a quick title switch to finally get those belts off them since they're not, you know, a full-time GCW talents now. But as it were, didn't happen. Still champs, busting the Brain. So
yeah. Exactly. Elsewhere on this show, you know, we gotta mention some things that that weren't exactly great. Didn't particularly love the other death match that we had in form of a tag team match.
Yes,
with Dysfunction and Nick Gage defeating Iceman and Jack Harrop.
This
was about 12 minutes. It could have easily been about 5.
Agreed. Nick Gage did not look well in this match, I didn't feel.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with him. I hope
he's doing okay, man. Yeah. Genuinely.
Yeah.
That guy's been through a lot in his life.
True.
But dude, yeah.
Something just did not feel right about this match. The way he looked, acted, his mannerisms. Could have been on some shit in this match, or coming off of some shit. I don't know what the fuck, but they did write him off as well. Kind of,
yeah.
I felt like they did a little bit at the end of the show in the backstage angle during the Cage of Survival. So,
yep, exactly.
There you go.
And let's talk about the Cage of Survival, actually. Yeah. Yeah. So in case people aren't quite familiar with this match type, it is essentially a gauntlet match. Yeah. And it is being contested inside of a steel cage, but it's not just that. It is a steel cage with a shitload of weapons in it.
Yes, it
is. A shitload of weapons that continually are added to it.
Yeah.
So one thing that was interesting with this show and with Tournament of Survival is we saw the ring crew essentially building these these playgrounds of just devious destruction for everybody this weekend. And whether it was in this Cage of Survival or whether it was the previous night in the tournament, we saw some very inventive stuff, to say the least, and a shock title change as Otis Koger, who wasn't even booked for the match, walks out with the GCW Ultraviolent Championship. As he defeated Matt Tremont at the very end, Matt Tremont and Viper started this thing off, and they were there all the way through. The ring announcer said, MLJ said that we could only have a maximum of 4 people in the ring. Yep. So those two essentially saw this shit all the way through to the end. And dude, Matt Tremont throws Viperus off of a scaffold through panes of glass. Oof. And dude, and I do have to laugh. Viperus posted to her social media that the bump that she took off of the top of the scaffold was the Foo 50 splash. So it's hilarious there. But at least she was okay. She was up, doing meet and greets and signing autographs and hanging out with the fans after the show.
Wow.
But yeah, this was, again, the continuation of the, Viperus kind of stealing the show a bit and, again, solidifying herself that she belongs in this type of a setting.
Yeah. Yeah. They were just begging for Viperus to go over in this match. And I even feel like when that spot hit, and it was a really like dangerous looking spot.
Oh my God,
hell. I think there was a bit, the crowd, you don't usually see this in a GCW show. The crowd just kind of went silent.
Yeah. Like the wind was taken out of them. They didn't give a shit about, what ended up happening next, which obviously As you had mentioned, Nick Gage essentially written off at the end of this show. He was the final participant, but he never made it to the ring as he was laid out in the backstage area and they just cut away. So obviously at the time, you were led to believe that the match was finished with the people that were out there. And then immediately after Tremont throws Viperous off the scaffold, then you hear Vandal 48's music hit. You hear, and then you see Otis Koger come out there and take off the mask and throw Matt Tremont down to the ring and just flat. let it rip.
Yep. It was
as only he can.
It sure, yeah. It was flat. It just felt really flat to me. I think the fans were still in like kind of
they were in shock. Were in shock. Yeah,
they were, and it was
not in a good way.
No, it was not. It didn't hit. Yeah. It didn't connect. I think part of the issue too is the Otis Koger thing with Tremont may have run its well too much. I think at this point we've seen it for like the last year.
Yeah.
It's been I get it. They want to continue to add heat to this feud. They want to add more intensity to this program. I get it, but what the fuck else is Koger and Tremont going to do at this point? It's treading water. It's just going in circles. And I think that's to pair that with the fact of the Viper spot and all that together, it just came across real flat and really kind of like a misfire, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. So that was Game Changer Wrestling for the weekend. Tournament of Survival was pretty solid. The ultra violent Cage of Survival was all right.
Yeah.
But let's get back to non deathmatch specific GCW, which I've found is when the death matches don't take the full center stage of everything with GCW, that's when they really shine.
Yeah.
When you have these types of events, yes, they're cool for the novelty factor and that kind of thing. I like a bit more variety, to say the very least.
Yeah. I kind of feel like these two events should be separated on different weekends altogether. Because Tournament of Survival should be like a crescendo to a weekend.
Yep.
You have a standard event prior to that, and then the Sunday show should be TOS, and then you do Cage of Survival like even a couple weeks later or a month later or something like that. But spread it out, I think you'd see better success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, guys. Let's talk now about OVW 1400. What a milestone episode, man. You had the Road Dogg on commentary. Yeah. You had John Cena making an appearance. Yeah. Jed, I'm going to let you run with this. Yeah. Talk to me about OVW.
Yeah, dude, it was fun. It was fun. As an OVW viewer for quite a while, this really hit a bunch of notes to me. It almost was like ECW One Night Stand and OVW.
Yes.
I mean, it really, truly was. It had
I thought almost the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of homaging earlier talents. We opened the show with quite the montage of the history of OVW and a lot of the bigger stars to come in and out of the company. There was a segment about halfway through where they had various legends coming out, one after the next old OVW talent. Names that randomly came out of nowhere, like Nova, Simon Dean, who all showed up in that segment. Then finally, in that segment too, where Al Snow was kind of moderating all these legends coming into the ring. And then at the end, the swerve of the swerves.
Yep.
John Cena's music comes on. The crowd loses their goddamn minds. I've never seen the Davis Arena like pop to that level. I mean, it was an extreme fucking reaction. And then Kerplunk, it's Daddy Doug Basham coming back in the fold. We haven't seen in a long time. The Revolution disbanded. They got rid of everything. They just dropped it like a bad habit. They ran its well on that one. But Doug Basham still around, still strutting, and he got his comeuppance in this segment as well.
Oh yeah, he did.
It was fun. That was a fun segment.
Yeah, that one. I, you know, realistically, when that segment started, I didn't know what to make of it because I'm not an OVW viewer on the regular.
Right.
But like you said, it was a fun segment, and you didn't have to watch their show at any point, realistically, to get full enjoyment out of that segment.
Yeah, it was nostalgia right in as a straight shot, man. And it just kept hitting and hitting and hitting. So that was fun. Going back to the Cena point, though, like you said, to end the show with a John Cena thank you OVW type of a little, you know, thing that he did off his cell phone. Yep. And then there was multiple talents that did this on the show, which I thought was really cool, too. Braun Strowman, Bully Ray, and ODB as well. So real cool. I have to say, at the end with Cena, I felt like I was like watching a Vegas Bad Boys
I thought the fucking same shit.
I just thought, whoa, man.
I was like, gimmick infringement.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was good fun, man. I got a kick out of that at the end. I was like, oh my God, this is right to a Bad Boys episode. So it was great. But for have Road Dogg on commentary for the entire episode. That was a nice change of pace.
Yeah. He did well.
He did. In fact, I think I'm just gonna throw it out there since the one guy now is the manager of the one tag team we saw on this show. So he may be permanently gone from the announce booth. Please bring Road Dogg back. Have him be a regular on OVW Rise every week. Please.
Yeah, and realistically, you know, he's another person that can, you know, throw some creative ideas here and there. Obviously, you know, we don't want him to do the entire show,
right.
But you know, his creative input would definitely be appreciated for sure.
Yeah. I do wonder if that may happen down the road now with him. He always has been pretty tight with the company. So work Rise on this show, that opener, that ladder match, dangerous match, scary match,
bro.
Yeah, there was a few spots in this match that not only scared the shit out of me, but made me kind of laugh at the same time because they were so absurdly botched. But they
Feisty gave it a- Boy Lawson and Brandon Balling.
Brandon Balling, yes, yeah. So Brandon Balling is chasing this title like a bad habit, and he didn't get it yet. This match was a car crash for sure, but an entertaining car crash at that. Speaking of another car crash on the show, Brandon Davis, a show VW segment.
Oh my God. Of a
car crash, wouldn't you say?
A bit?
Yeah.
A bit?
Yeah. God, what the
wow.
Fuck? Yeah. And then for that all to segue to a blow off of the Icon Lee and TW3 angle that I've been talking about on the show with the sheep angle where he's wearing the sheep outfit, and out of nowhere with no setup, we get this lawyer guy come out and say, hey, these guys, if they have a match right now, TW3 will, you know, get this gimmick away if he beats Icon Lee. They did it. It's done. TW3 got the shit off of him, but the feud will continue with Icon Lee. It's still coming up. There's more to be brought in on levels with this storyline. But yeah, to have that as a follow-up from this Brandon Davis fucking shit show of a segment. There you go.
With fucking Jesse Godders.
Yeah, with Jesse Godders
of all people showing up.
And yeah.
American Gladiator himself.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, one of the gladiators, American Gladiators, the new one. So,
yeah.
And a longtime OVW competitor.
Oh, yes.
He's definitely had his runs in the company. Oh, so, there was yet another nostalgia burst for you on this one. New champs as well. Drew Hernandez won the media championship, and lovely Miss Larson won the women's championship. Pretty quick matches, but a lot of stuff happening on the show. The Jay De Niro match with Superior Tony Evans, I thought was pretty solid. And Jay De Niro did not win the U.S. title. Like I kind of thought was going to happen here. Tommy Boy De Niro T's going back with his dad, Jay De Niro, then turned back on him, costing in the match, and now Superior Tony Evans has a win on the world champion, Jay De Niro, which means I think that they're going to have another match, probably with some stipulations, and for the LVW World Championship coming out of that. What was your thoughts on Cal Hero and Stephen Steele?
Bro, so that match, I haven't been watching, you know, the ins and outs every single week with this feud. To be honest, though, I kind of thought that Stephen Steele would have gone over here. When he didn't, and so obviously, as the graphic shows, there was a special guest referee, Kevin Thorne. And, you know, this was a Falls Count Anywhere match. These guys brawled out back. You know, they left the building and did their thing outside and brawled by the dumpsters. And next thing you know, bing, bang, boom. And Stephen Steele is laid out for the 1-2-3. And I'm like,
surprised.
What?
I know. I was surprised too. I don't know if this is the end of the program. It may not be. These guys have gone in waves of Tweenerville, USA in this program. 1 week, one guy is angled more heavy on the babyface side. The next week it shifts. It is a constant back and forth where there's so much shades of gray in this program. I can't really figure if they're still going with it, where everybody is coming off of things with this, who is going to be a heel, who's going to be a babyface. I feel like maybe there's more to come. I think maybe the next round in this is Cal Hero's going to be braggadocious and Stephen Steele's going to be relentless, and he's going to kind of not take any shit and keep going at Cal Hero. We'll see where they go with it. And then they have Kevin Thorne turn on Cal Hero at the end of this match too. Yeah. Is a bit of a head scratcher. I don't know if that's a program coming up or time will tell. We'll see where they pivot. We'll see where they go with it. But I feel like these guys have something still special that they could definitely do another big match where Stephen Steele does go over Cal Hero. And I think it should happen. I feel like, come on. I mean, the fans love Stephen Steele. We've talked about it before. No matter where you position him as a babyface or heel, certain days of the which episode and whatnot, still at the end of the day, this guy's got something. And to keep him down, especially in an environment like OVW, I don't see it. I think Al Snow and the Bookers are smarter than that. We will see. To be continued on that.
Oh, yeah.
And what about that main event? I'll say this much. I didn't expect as much as I got out of JBL in this match.
I thought the same, dude. Like I figured he would just, you know, get a couple of clotheslines from hell at the end of the match, and that would be like the only thing he did. Right. No, it wasn't like that.
Not at all. Not at all. It was a main event style match.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it.
He looked all right.
He sure did. Yeah. I think he legitimately did lose his luggage or something, or didn't have his gear with him. Those boots did not look like they were his boots.
Dude, they did not look comfortable either.
No, they were a little loose on him. I feel like he was about to fall out of his boots one time or another. So, but good stuff. Nice way to end the show. And then to have that Cena thing at the end to cap it all off. Real fun night. Real fun night. Absolutely. At OVW.
Hell yeah, man. OVW tearing it up, but the hits just keep on coming. All right, let's talk about MLW Fusion. And dude, this show was 1 hour and probably the fastest hour that I watched all week. This was a breeze to get through, man. And I'm not talking shit about any of these other promotions, but this was just a lot of fun.
It was. Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now, Diego Hill showed out against Mystico.
No shit. Did he ever? And to have and then to Mystico, I mean, cut a promo afterwards to put his ass over. This was a star-making performance all the way. And the crowd in Chicago at Cicero Stadium was on point in this one. I've been to TNA shows there, and the environment at that small little venue is really second to none. And I think it's a heavy Latino community in that area. So okay. It makes sense why this match with Mystico and Diego Hill had a great amount of heat. They loved Mystico.
And it definitely has to be mentioned too, that Diego Hill is being mentored by Blue Panther of all people. Yeah. So you've got the inner workings with, you know, Blue Panther and Mystico being factored into this too. So good shit, man.
It really was.
And that was one out of the three matches on this show, man. You know, elsewhere, I mean, we got a new MLW Women's World Champion too, as Shotzi Blackheart takes the title off of Shoko Nakajima. And she is the face and the balls of MLW, as she said.
Yes, she is. Another solid match. I think all these matches were like 3 for 3, basically. There was really nothing on mid-level on this show. I think all these matches delivered.
Shots all hit, bro. They all hit.
They all hit very well. Like you said, the fastest hour by far that I saw this week. It just lickety split hit, and I was really, really feeling this episode of Fusion.
Hell yeah, man. And you know, to cap it all off, we had the Skyscrapers, the team of Donovan Dijak and Bishop Dyer, going at it with the Good Brothers in a tables match for the MLW World Tag Team Championships. And we saw some pretty decent amount of blood in this match too. It wasn't just a tables match, man. We had some plunder going on in this too.
Sure did. Yeah, there was a lot of brawling all over the place in that small little arena there and at Cicero Stadium, and crowd was feeling it. I was feeling it. This was a fun match.
Hell yeah.
Not sure if the program's completely done yet. Time will tell on that. To be continued, as we say.
Time will tell. Absolutely, man. All right, let's turn the page and let's talk about NWA, or more apropos, Jed, talk about NWA.
Yes, sir. another episode of Power on Comet. Power. And a few things this week. We had a new television champion crown. Apparently the television title was vacated. Don't really know the whole history of that. Like I said, it's been following NWA again for about a month or two. But Alex Misery in a 5-way went over Lockjaw Drake, Daisy Kill, Jack JC, and Wrecking Ball Ligursky. Solid opener. Not super familiar with a lot of these talents, so wasn't fully invested in this match, but it was fine. Other things on this episode, the Slime Balls were in a match, and they won and retained their U.S. tag titles. I love that team. That team is just fun. If they ever have a Slime Balls versus Outrunner match in any promotion, sign me the fuck up.
It's got to happen.
Yes.
It's got to happen. A Slime Ball.
Please. Yes. Also on this episode, there was a little bit of follow-up on Trevor Murdoch's retirement. I don't think this is really an storyline angle. It very well could be still. They may decide at some point to change it up. But the vibe I'm getting, and they got reaffirmed on this episode, is that Trevor Murdoch is retired. He did like a speech to the roster that they showed a little bit of on this episode as well. By all means, it's like he's taking more of a mentoring role to certain talent at this point, it seems like. The other thing that was really built on this show was the Thrillbilly Silas Mason, the NWA World Champion, getting things kind of going with some programs with him. We know about the Kerry Morton program that's coming up as Kerry Morton turned on the NWA champion recently, and the Southern Six was broken up because of it. So that's on the horizon. And then also Silas got into it with a guy named Carson Drake, who is a real, like, snobby, obnoxious, highfalutin kind of heel. He's constantly laughing at himself. He's just a real hottie-totty type of motherfucker. So they had a segment where Carson Drake was beating up on one of the trainees of the NWA. And Thrill Billy came in and kind of broke it up, got in the face of Carson Drake. So we got a couple different programs kind of on the horizon for the NWA World Championship. Kind of think they might go with the Carson Drake program with Thrill Billy first, and then long-term build to the Kerry Morton match. That seems like that's something more long-term that they're going to go, but we'll see where it shakes out. And then, like, near the end of the mat or end of the show, we had Natalia Markova in a grudge match against the giant Greta. I've talked about Greta before, and how Greta costed Markova the NWA Women's Championship recently. And so that all led to this match. This was a bowling shoe ugly match, let me tell you, in every fucking facet of the imagination. It was rough. Even in a post-production situation, they could not clean this match up. It was shit. It was ugly, ugly, fucking ugly, folks. But yeah, that's about it for the NWA this week. Greta did go over Markova by disqualification in one of this is the thing too. I thought they would fix this in post-production, but they had a situation where Greta was trying to make the referee look like Markova hit her with a chair and she did the fake sell, you know, the heel spot where they throw the chair in the ring, the babyface grabs the chair, the heel then drops, kind of like the Eddie Guerrero thing.
Eddie spot.
They tried it with this match. The referee was looking right at the competitors as all this happened, and yet the referee disqualified Markova. I don't get it. It was obviously a botch. But Billy Corgan just decided, I guess, that they couldn't fix it in post-production.
It was
ugly all the way, and the match itself was rough. Then to have a finish like that on top of an already sketchy match was, this fucking match sucks, dick. Tell you that much.
That's
power, man. That's it for power this week.
That was power.
It was powerful.
All right.
Powerfully bad a little bit in spots, too.
Damn. All right, so let's talk about Memphis Wrestling and your boy, Hollywood Jimmy, running things. I mean, you see him right there. He's on his throne in the image.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes, he is continuing the abuse of power as it goes. Yes.
Speaking of power.
Yeah, speaking of power, this is the real power right here.
Yeah.
Hollywood Jimmy, let me tell you. Yeah, once again, raising hell in the super, what is it, the Wrestle Center?
The Wrestle Center,
yes, indeed. Yes, so he just continues to pull shit and be a shitty motherfucker, and what can you say about this guy? He's got presence. It's an overlaid storyline that week to week I'm looking forward to on Memphis Wrestling, so I hope it continues. I just don't know where it's going to go exactly.
Yeah.
That's anybody's guess, but obviously somebody's going to step up here and, you know, something's going to go down eventually. So
it's just a matter of who is going to do it.
Yep.
You know, obviously they started off the show, by talking and showing footage from the previous week of Hollywood Jimmy's security detail, the Secret Service, throwing Handsome Jimmy Valiant out of the Wrestle Center. And, the whole situation with Hollywood Jimmy and King Cobra. The only thing that I can figure that's going to happen is there's got to be some sort of like a team, like a mass tag team match or something of that nature where, you know, Hollywood Jimmy's Hollywood Click goes against King Cobra's team that he assembles.
Yeah,
and that's got to be the ultimate end game for this, right?
Right. Yeah, I would think that's going to be where the blow off's going to be at some point. I just don't know who that's going to be and who they're bringing in. I mean, I figure somebody big they're got to bring in to take care of business here.
I mean, they Not for nothing, but they have been advertising Memphis Wrestling Legends PG-13 showing up.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe they might have something to say to old Hollywood Jimmy. You know,
that might be something. Yeah, I'd be down for that. So
Wolfie D and JC Ice themselves.
Yeah, that could be something. So we'll see where they go with it. Yeah, that could be very
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely. Dude, we actually had a Marco Stunt signing on this show.
We sure did, didn't we? Yeah.
Dude, Memphis Wrestling, it's an hour, but you see some of the most hyperbolic characters that you're going to run into in independent pro wrestling. You can definitely tell that you got people of all different backgrounds and all different tenures, if you will, and it's fun. This is a fun show week in and week out. Because you see things on this show that you're not going to see anywhere else.
Absolutely. You're not going to see this kind of energy either. It's
right.
I've said it before. It's a studio show. It's rowdy fans. They're standing up. They're getting in the wrestlers' faces. Very animated back and forth. A lot of interaction.
They don't even have a damn guardrail.
Nothing at all. Yep.
You know, so it's literally the fans just hanging out right next to the ring. So that energy is infectious for sure. Mike Anthony continues to be a standout name from this brand that I've seen so far, being completely new to the Memphis wrestling scene. But he defeated the Vibe Check in this show in a 2-on-1 handicap match. And it was a continuation of the storyline where Mike Anthony's got a bounty on his head that was put there by Tim Bosby, the Heritage Champion. And this just keeps on rolling. So obviously we're going to end up with that Bosby and Anthony match. It's only a matter of time until Anthony takes that title off of Bosby.
Yep. In fact, I believe I got a glimpse at a lineup of a taping that they're either doing this weekend or something really soon. And that's actually the main event. So I think we're going to be seeing that probably within the month aired. And then also upcoming, I did see on the same card that they're, I believe it's happening this weekend, is Marco Harris against Marco Stunt, which was set up significantly on the show. So all points lead to this. It's like an all-American sort of a vibe of an event. So I'm thinking they might air it like on July 4th weekend or something like that. So we will see where that goes with it.
That would make a lot of sense, man.
Yep.
So, that was Memphis Wrestling. They are keeping tradition alive.
Woo.
But, we're gonna go completely to the opposite end of the spectrum. And we're going to talk about India's finest, WXM, Ground Zero. And this was a fun show, man. I say it every week. This was a fun, quick, easy, one-hour show. And in the opening match, we had the Luchadores tag team from CMLL, Capitan Suicida and Flip Gordon doing their thing, beating a couple of the local talents there in India, the Zarmandar gang. Flip Gordon, I think, is vastly underrated. I've talked about that on this show, but don't really give enough love to Capitan Suicida, who is great in the ring as well. So I like this pairing. They complement each other very well. So good stuff there. Elsewhere on this show, there was a multi-woman tag match. And some pretty recognizable names in here. You had Emi Sakura getting in there with Lady Catherine, Mila Schmidt, and Sheikah Zuzu, defeating Angel Hayes, Kanji, Mei Suruga, and Mia Yatsuba. And this was a bunch of women in there with all different types and styles of wrestling. So it was a pretty fun match here. This was, believe it or not, one of the times where you see Emi Sakura in a match that she actually won. So, you know, that's a first.
Color me surprised. Yeah.
No shit. But elsewhere on the show, your main event was a Big Damo with Axel Tischer defeating Guru, former NXT talent there as well. Mm-hmm. So again, they're running with recognizable names and just getting it done. One thing that's really nice that they're doing is, you know, whether it's the no DQ type match that they had a couple of weeks back with the former Jinder Mahal, Raj the Maharaja, or on a night like this where things kind of stayed between the lines across the board in a lot of cases, they don't have to resort to, you know, any kind of cheap tactics in order to put on a solid wrestling show. And this is their, episode number 24. Mm-hmm. So they're only 24 episodes in, and they're doing things pretty well. A very well-rounded show, to say the least. But Jed, let's talk about a very well-rounded, I guess a couple of shows. I only saw one of them, but we'll talk about one of those together. You'll talk about the one that you saw by yourself. As I'm talking about Ring of Honor, and yeah, man, this was an enjoyable show.
It sure was.
You know, you had Deonna Purrazzo and Viva Van. I think this was a standout match on this show.
Yeah.
I think Viva Van is one of the hidden talents that Tony has that. Mm-hmm. Whether it's on Ring of Honor, whether it's on Collision, whether it's an enhancement role on Dynamite, Viva, if you ask her to go out there and do something, she's going to do it, and she's going to do it extremely well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here, Deonna Purrazzo ended up looking strong in this match, rightfully so. She is one of the most technically gifted wrestlers, not just women wrestlers, but total wrestlers on the planet. So it's always good to see her doing her thing. But, dude, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, how about that Inspiration and Mina and Harley match?
Something went viral on that match. Multiple times on
it. Oh, yeah, dude.
The hello, the titty. Yeah, it was a thing, and it was a highlight of the show, no shirt. No shit. It was fun. I enjoyed it. Yeah, it was definitely on the other end of the spectrum. It wasn't a high work rate thing or anything like that. It was just a fun, little fancy free highlight of this episode of Ring of Honor on YouTube. This was aired on Tuesday, I believe, if I recall. But I thought the four-way match for the World Television Championship was great.
It was that was much better than, and realistically, I saw the four names in this match, and I was like, okay, this has the potential to be very, very good, because all four of these guys are great workers.
Yep.
That doesn't always translate given whatever situation that they are possibly being shoehorned into, but I think this match definitely delivered. Mm-hmm. I was shocked as shit to see AR Fox walk out with that championship, though. I thought it was going to go to Ace Austin.
True. Yeah, I thought there was going to be a switch here, given the nature of the four-way, an easy way to get the belt off of him, perhaps, and save some face. There was a Lio Rush sighting in this match as well.
Oh, yes, there was.
Yep. So that we'll talk about that a little bit, but that leads to something coming up here involving him and AR Fox and somebody else as well coming up next week. That I'm looking forward to. But I have to say also with AR Fox, the sit down promo interview with Caprice Coleman. Wow.
That was good. That was really good.
Maybe the
best. Never let AR Fox talk.
No shit. I know this was a first and hopefully not a last, because I thought there was true emotion in this segment.
Yes.
I think this was one of the better talking segments of the week on any wrestling program, just because of the sheer felt real. It just felt real. It felt real. Yeah. Simple as that.
Absolutely.
And I also enjoyed the little vignette with the Outrunners and Dalton Castle as well.
Oh yeah. How could you not?
Yeah, that was fun. And the and their match on the show was great as well. That opened up the show. Yes. That was an 8-man tag with Adam Priest, if I believe, against Lethal Twist and Jalisco. So
yes.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And shout out to Beef, by the way, for being slightly less beefy.
Yeah.
Dude's putting in some work and he's dropping some LBs, man.
Yeah, man. He's trimmed and firmed up a little bit. So not so beefy, like you said. So
yeah. And Action Andretti doing his thing, man. I think that, you know, with the whole Leo Rush thing, he's very quickly been discarded for a lot of people. But you know, he's very solid in the ring and he could do some things given the right situation.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to this program with Leo Rush to see where that goes. I mean, obviously we know how long these guys were a team. So it's a long time coming that we see these guys work a program. Andretti is really coming in his own here, in this heel role. I think it's a much more natural role for him instead of that, you know, when he first started and he got put over by Jericho and AEW and stuff, that felt like a little bit of a forced role for him little bit, where this is more natural. And I think it feels a lot better in it. And the output is much better too.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Talk to me about that other Ring of Honor show.
Yeah, so then I followed up on this and saw Ring of Honor on Honor Club this week. Speaking of Andretti, again, Action Andretti had a really standout match on this Thursday's episode against Soleil, who is Reggie, a.k.a. What's his name? That's in GCW, where they call him. It's his real name. But Reggie, formerly in WWE. Why am I forgetting the guy's name? Real acrobatic.
Sidney Akeem.
Sidney Akeem, yes.
Yeah.
Sidney Akeem, Soleil against Action Andretti. Really good match on Ring of Honor. These were all from Jacksonville, so that studio setting. A couple other matches really stood out as well. This was a first for me of seeing Red Velvet and Zeta Steel in there as a tag team. I think there's potential there. They actually worked against the Inspiration. So we saw the Inspiration one more time this week on Ring of Honor in another match that was not nearly as lighthearted. It was a different vibe, this match. This was more of a competitive match where these girls were actually working their butts off. And I frankly think that this match with Zeta Steel and Red Velvet was probably the best match I've seen the Inspiration have in a long time.
Wow.
In terms of like actually, you know, working hard in there and putting in the work.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I was surprised. And then the main event on the Ring of Honor TV this week was a Proving Ground match for the Ring of Honor Championship. It was that 10-minute time limit, eliminator style, what kind of format you call it. But it was Angelico against Bandido. And Angelico almost got to the 10-minute mark. So close. We were at 9 minutes and some seconds. Mm-hmm. And Bandido sneaked out the win on that one. So that kind of sets things up for next week. And we'll talk about that coming up here. But a big next week set for Ring of Honor as part of Global Wars. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Oh, yes. We most definitely will. But first, let's talk about Hokane's Wrath.
Boy, oh boy.
On JCW, our main event, if you will.
Yes.
And, dude, they wasted no time. They got this episode running hot and heavy real quick right out of the gate.
They sure did. Yeah, there was a lot going on this show. There was a lot of...
if you liked EC3, this was the show for you.
I guess so, yeah. I thought that the whole concept that they did on this episode with EC3 was a little bit much.
You think?
I think quite a bit much. I guess they had to make up for the fact that he wasn't on JCW the last 3 weeks. So thus we have three matches with EC3. Very much an overload. It was, I think this whole angle, this whole storyline could have been condensed in one fucking match.
Yep.
in the one match, of course, would have been the final match, which was a big, big reveal. Somebody finally came.
Oh my God.
He came. Oh my God.
He was coming for several weeks.
Yeah, he was coming some more. And Joel Gertner was, what was first?
Dude.
What was with the Joel Gertner promo like at the beginning of the show where he said,
I've been asking myself that exact thing since he's shown up on JCW. Oh, I don't get what his promos are. Like, yeah. I get him doing the naughty nursery rhymes and shit like that.
It's a gimmick, right? Yeah, that makes sense.
He was going off on some tangent about Buffalo Wild Wings and the Blazing Wing Challenge and how he was a juggalo for life, quoting what is a juggalo, like gratuitously.
Very weird.
Come on.
I felt like speaking like blazed, and I think he was blazed out in that first segment. It was so weird. It was like, what in the flying fuck is going on with this guy?
Yeah.
And what? Yeah. A lot of just diarrhea of the mouth, man. It's just so weird. But then we got the reveal, and it's Josh Bishop is the new guy with Joel Gertner. Yeah. So a bit of a flat, however, they did, how they explain this in JCW lore, at least I feel it in that essence. The guy won the JCW championship. He never lost it. He had a falling out with the company. So he's coming back like unscathed, essentially. Yeah. And playing the legacy champion or whatever they call that, you know, or the linear champion.
Yes, the linear champion.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So match itself wasn't that great with EC3 and Josh Bishop, but it was what it was. We got a reveal. He finally came. It's finally over. But the other two matches were absolutely fucking pointless and downright. The match with Father Bronson was
ugly
as hell. Just a bad match.
This Father Bronson character, I don't get. Maybe I'm just not intelligent enough, and I'm saying that tongue in cheek. I don't get it. Like,
me either.
It does not resonate with me whatsoever.
Yeah, it's a very dry gimmick, and I think it's supposed to be. I get it.
Yeah,
kind of on that level a bit. He's supposed to be kind of creepy, and he's trying to get over that way by like just people feeling uncomfortable about his presence or something. But
yeah.
Work rate wise, the guy just doesn't have it either. Just gotta say it. I'm just not feeling it at all. I don't think there's gonna be I just don't know where you go with a gimmick like this either. So,
not at all, man. Yeah. I do gotta say though, I fucking love Kerry Morton's theme song.
I was hoping you mentioned that. That fucking theme. What the fuck is right?
It's so good.
It is.
It's so cheesy. Yeah. It works. It fucking works.
Yeah. That's new. He used to have the Southern Six theme, and now they've flipped it. And now that he's like a full baby face, I guess.
He is full on baby face.
He is, man. They made him like look
1980s style baby face.
He was the white meat baby face in that match with Shane Mercer all the way. I couldn't believe it. I was flabbergasted between that and the wacky music that came out before and after that match. Wow. Yeah, I love it though. I love it. It fits with everything JCW is about. It fucking fits. It fits.
Absolutely does, man.
Yeah. How about speaking of another surprise on this show?
Yes.
We got the fourth stage of hell.
Yep.
And it was none other than Cruel.
Yeah.
We did not expect that.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
Not just to see him on the show, but the fact that he's being booked.
True. At anywhere, I guess if any company would take a misfit, it would be JCW. I mean, it does make sense.
It works.
It does work.
It works.
And will it be one and done? I don't know. I don't want it to be either. If he's not going to get bookings anywhere else, give the guy a shot here. He fits the vibe. He fits the style he could feud with Cocaine. He could fit with the Outbreak. I mean, there's just a longevity of storylines this guy could do with different types of characters of his ilk. So why the fuck not? But yeah. That finish of the Caleb Conley cruel match, that burning hammer burned my neck.
Holy fucking shit, dude. He dropped him on his damn head.
No kidding. Oh boy. Yeah, that was one hell of a finish, bro. Woo-wee. We did get one thing that didn't get answered by the end of this show, and that was who the
they said specifically we would fucking get an answer for this shit too.
Yeah, I was fucking like feeling a little bit pissed at the end of this episode because they just straight up did another Russo swerve on our ass.
They fucking lied.
Yep, they lied. They promised us we're gonna get an answer. They sure tease certain things and smells and all this kind of jazz, but nothing could connect to me. So until next week, I guess we get that big reveal.
Hey man, Barnabas is, he's doing his thing and, you know, the Outbreak, they're doing their thing, I guess.
Yeah. They got a hold of some talcum powder this episode. If I recall, man, they are desperate for a buzz. Let me tell you, holy shit. Good Lord. And then the end of the show too, with, the Alice Crowley segment.
Yeah.
What's going on with Mac Davis, by the way? Now, is he going to be like a pervert dude that's going in women's bathrooms? Like,
dude, he's been interviewing Alice Crowley in the women's bathroom the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
What? So, I mean,
pivoting with him, man. I don't know. I mean, I think like you said, I think they're still going to do the facade match.
Yeah.
Probably at the Juggalo gathering or something like that is a big blow off.
Yeah.
By the way, I heard and saw some stuff online that you were absolutely 110% correct that I saw an interview with Violent J, and he said basically all these storylines from Lunacy are going to crescendo at the Gallery of the Juggalos. It's going to be their WrestleMania. They're doing Bloody Mania, two nights of Bloody Mania at the Gallery of the Juggalos, and it's going to be a blow off of all of these storylines that we've been following month to month on Lunacy.
We're going to be checking that shit out. We're going to be talking about it.
Oh yeah. It'll be a while. I think the gathering isn't until like August or something like that.
I thought it was July.
It might be July. You might be right. Yeah. It might be July. It's coming up sometime this
July summer, or August, one of the two, but it's definitely one of the summer months.
Yep. So we're probably going to see, like, going back to this whole Kane and Alice Crowley thing, probably going to get that match at the Gallery at Bloody Mania. We're probably going to get Vito and his cronies against Violent J and Willie Mack, Too Tough Tony. Where is the Brothers of Funstruction going to be in the mix of that? Is the one guy actually, like, he was even threatening that he may be killed.
Right.
Luigi Primo, where is he fitting in all this shit? There's so many questions, not enough answers, but I'm still hooked into the storyline, but that will certainly crescendo at the big one too.
Dude, the Vito segments this week, I fucking lost my shit.
I know.
How is this guy doing the best work of his career in 2026?
I know. It's unbelievable.
I'm not mad at it whatsoever. I think it's extremely cool that we're seeing this guy who's been in the business for as long as he has and been the places he's been do the best character work that he's ever done.
Yeah, just he's like he's unhinged.
And it's in JCW of all places.
I know. And it's just like this unhinged, unfiltered, don't give a fuck what he says, does. I love it. It's great. I never thought I'd admit that, but he is a hell of a character.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And obviously, you know, the drama continues. As we saw in the opening of the show between J-Rod and Danny Moe over the JCW Lunacy Women's Championship, as Danny Moe still contests that possession is 9/10 of the law as she carries around J-Rod's JCW Women's Championship.
Yeah.
Claiming it's hers.
I feel like something's missing here. I don't know what it is.
They got to figure something out.
Yeah, there's got to be another talent that they're intending to get in the mix of all this or something.
Yes.
I don't know, but I can't figure out where the direction is, where the roles are. You know, is Danny Mo like gonna fully turn heel? She's halfway there, or is there some, I don't know. I guess we'll find out, but they got to have some plan the way this is going.
Absolutely. And we shall see. And we got to figure out the identity of the fucking dealer sometime.
Damn right. Yeah, that's got to be coming next week.
Motherfuckers, don't fucking lie to us again, right. Russo. If you say we're going to get something, give us the fucking payoff.
Yes, yes. Don't waste time, motherfucker. Come on.
The only thing I can figure is he figured, okay, they're getting the payoff for whoever's coming and has been coming the last few weeks. So right. I don't want to give them two payoffs in one show.
Space it out between them. It's gotta be. Thing. I mean, there was the cruel thing. There was there was the Josh Bishop thing. So we did get a lot of like surprises on this episode. So I guess if you're going to space it out a week or two, so be it.
Absolutely, man. And that was JCW Lunacy. All right. So next up, we are going to talk about the shows that we are looking forward to seeing in the upcoming weeks, and specifically next week. I'm going to jump off and start things off. We were just talking about one JCW. I'm going to talk about another JCW, this one being Jersey Championship Wrestling. The brother or sister promotion to Game Changer Wrestling. This show is going to be coming to you live on June 13th. So depending on when you're watching this show or listening to this show, that's either tomorrow or today, or it already happened.
Right.
We'll see. But regardless, this should be a fun show as some very solid matches have been announced. You've got Marcus Mathers on the show. You got Cheeseburger versus Leo Sparrow, which should be a solid match. I'm personally looking forward to Alec Price versus Junie Underwood. That one should be good. Even some intergender action. We got Jordan Oliver versus Gabby Forza on the show.
Right on.
But your JCW title is on the line in the main event as Charles Mason defends his JCW championship against Teriyaki, the man with the best name in the business.
I love it. Yeah, man. I
love it. But Jed, I got to know, what are you looking forward to this week, brother?
Yeah, so Championship Wrestling, formerly known from Hollywood, now just known as UWN Championship Wrestling, which on a side note, really didn't have a whole lot going on this week on the episode. That's why we didn't really talk too much about it. Incidentally, which is odd, they did not on Championship Wrestling from Hollywood this week promote this card at all, which is just coming up this Sunday. It's very odd. I don't understand the marketing side of that. But this is a pretty big event that's coming up this Sunday on Triller Plus, live over in, I believe, Long Beach, California, from the Thunder Studios. Sunday Night Slam is back. This will be the third edition of Sunday Night Slam. You can see the lineup on the screen. It's headlined by Jordan Cruz and Willie Mack for the UWN World Championship.
Hell yeah.
Yep, and we also have a World Tag Team Championship match with 5150. That's Slice Boogie. That's Danny Limelight. He's in there. Show. Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Good stuff. Yep, definitely remember those guys coming on
you with the
Vegas Bad Boys. And they're working against Transcendence, Bryce Saturn, and then this other gentleman that you see there. So they're part of a group with Evan Daniels, Evantourage, I believe it is, the Evantourage. So they've had some stuff where they're a little bit on and off with Evan Daniels. So they're trying to kind of go out on their own, and this is their attempt to get the World Tag Team Championships. Also, Big Mama against Simone for the Women's Championship. We saw Big Mama not too long ago on Memphis Wrestling, if you recall. Yep. And then we got Maximilian and Evan Daniels in there against Matthias and Ray Jazz. I would expect probably a couple more matches added to the card. Sunday Night Slam coming up this Sunday night on Triller Plus. Check it out. I enjoyed the other editions of Sunday Night Slam, and we'll We'll see where this one lands, but that world championship match seems pretty damn fun to me. So, and again, I don't get why they're not promoting this on Championship Wrestling. Perhaps this weekend, the episode this weekend, which airs tomorrow, Saturday, may have some promotion heavy for this show. Maybe that's the angle they're going with it, like a last minute sell. We'll see where they go, but I'm all for it coming up this Sunday.
Hell yeah, man. And you know, obviously those two shows we are each looking forward to, but there's one show that's coming up that we're both looking forward to. Yes. And I'm talking about Ring of Honor, CMLL and Stardom present Global Wars in Cincinnati, Ohio, a city that I'm very familiar with. Oh, yeah. And that's going to be on Thursday, June 18th from watchroh.com. So, Jed, tell me about that show.
So this Global Wars show was taped in two segments on the Dynamite tapings this week from Cincinnati, as well as the Collision tapings on Thursday from the same location in Cincinnati. So they've kind of split both tapings and fused them into one with this Global Wars event coming up on Thursday. So let's talk about a non-spoiler lineup here from the tapings. We have a lot of matches here. It looks to be that we have the potential on the show of 12 matches.
Holy shit.
So it's going to be quite a loaded show. Suri out of the Orient, Japan, the IWGP Women's Champion, is working against Athena. That is for the Ring of Honor World Championship.
Dude, Shuri and Athena, that's a fucking match worth the price of admission by itself.
Yeah, man. Yeah, not title for title, just for the Ring of Honor World Championship. However, on night two, Suri worked against Billy Starks as well.
Okay.
So the question is going to be this. Are those matches both going to be on Global Wars? We will see. They could do something where they do an angle to start out the show. Yep. And maybe to get to Athena, we have a thing where Billy Starks is put in there against her first and foremost. I think that's very likely a scenario, or some fallout where we have it on Ring of Honor the week after. We'll see.
Yeah.
But very interesting that Suri worked two matches, in two nights here as part of this whole Global Wars thing. Lots of championship matches as well on this show. We have AEW National Championship, Mark Davis and Ace Austin.
Okay.
AEW International Championship, Takeshita against Lee Johnson. A big match, which may very well possibly be the main event of Global Wars, or it could be the Athena match with Suri, is the World Television Title match in Ring of Honor. Leo Rush against Action Andretti against AR Fox.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, nice. I think that's probably going to be the main event. I could be wrong. It was the way they filmed these shows. It was the last match of the second night of the tapings.
Oh,
so going by that, potentially, we'll see where they go with it. But that could be possible. We also got a pretty hot sounding match on an 8-man tag level. The Outrunners, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Mystico against Jay Lethal, Blake Christian, and Roppongi Vice.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Have my attention, sir.
Yeah, I thought that sounded pretty hot. And then we have a lot of interpromotional matches as well. We have Deonna Purrazzo defending the Pure Championship against CMLL Worker Olympia.
Okay.
Yep, we have Queen Aminata against Hanako. We have Micah against Diamante. We have Takumi Irona against Hayan. So there's a lot of the women are having some promotional battles on this show as part of the Stardom intermixing with the CMLL as well. So all in all, quite a lineup. We'll see. I'm thinking all this stuff will air with maybe the exception of that Billy Starks and Saray match, but I have a feeling we're probably going to have them all on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. We've got quite a bit to come, so you know it's It's going to be an interesting week, but sure. Before we get there, man, let's give the people some final thoughts, Jed, and tell the people where they can follow you and subscribe to YouTube and all that kind of fun shit.
Absolutely. Red Jed's Wrestling Rants on YouTube. Super Red Jed's the handle. We're going to have some fun stuff coming up, folks. The month of July is going to be a really fun month. First and foremost, we're going to kick off some rants on Wrestling Rants. You are going to be joining me, Sin City Steve, for some mid-year awards, taking a look back at the first half of 2026 to really kick off some rantamanias on Wrestling Rants. And then in the month of July as well, there's going to be some interesting things on the horizon on my end. I have a ticket for the AEW Baseball Brawl event at Target Field as part of a Minnesota Twins baseball game against the Anaheim Angels. After the show, there is an AEW event of approximately 75 minutes. I've been hearing online, or at least reading about it around those links. Don't know if it's going to be taped or not. I certainly hope it will be.
I hope so.
Yeah, it should be. I think they should really air this as like a collision episode, extension, something. They really should do that. So that's coming up on July 10th. I am strongly debating going to the G1 event for New Japan on July 11th. And then moving forward, there's going to be a whole lot of shaking going on in Minnesota as part of SummerSlam week. That's all going to be on the horizon for Wrestling Rants as part of just live events that you're going to be seeing exclusive clips from. And this, that, and another thing. And, of course, the rants are coming back in July, too. So lots of fun stuff up ahead. Wrestling Rants, baby!
Ha! Hell yeah. Super Red Jed on YouTube. Give him a follow. Subscribe to his channel. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And, yeah, I'll be there for the mid-year awards. We're gonna be making some waves with that for sure.
Absolutely. And we'll probably be doing a Forbidden Door review as well together, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yes.
But first things first, guys, I want to say thank you to everybody for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, a very special thank you to all the brave men and women serving this country. Whether you're doing it on lands foreign or domestic, thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, REPPsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, and general energy needs. Again, repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout and save yourself 10%. That brings us to the end, man.
Indeed. But
that's the best part about pro wrestling. There's no time off. So we're going to be right back here next week for the Sin City Indie Report. But before then, we've got the Vegas Bad Boys podcast. We've got the flagship show Wrestling Talk coming your way on Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Pacific time. So be looking for that. Join us on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch, and throw some comments into the chat. We'd love to have you. And then also we have our one-on-one every week with FSW owner, and he's the guy. He's the guy, the chairman, the president, the CEO, whatever accolades you want to give him, the founder himself, Joe DeFalco, Future Stars of Wrestling, man, Vegas Independent Wrestling. You got to love it. We will be talking about the 17th anniversary show right here on the Sin City Indie Report next week as FSW spirals toward number 17. But until then, guys, thanks for hanging out with us. We will see you guys right back here next week.
Did any of you have a great time tonight?
Yeah! With that, everybody, thank you for hanging out. We will we'll do it all again next week. Till then, happy wrestling.
Rolling up the strip under neon lights. Podcast mics glowing in the desert nights. Matt and Michael's leading with the swagger tights. Sin City Steve right by his side. All right. Rob Bucciarelli dropping truths, no fear. Broadcasting stories, make it loud and clear. From the Fremont edges to the Bellagio sphere. These bad boys rule, let me make that clear. Vegas bad boys tearing up the scene.
To Matt. Michaels and the Vegas Boys of Podcasting. This is John Cena saying thank you so much.